The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
All right. Well, welcome to City Bible Forum today. My name is Russell Matthews. We want to welcome you to City Bible Forum in the continuing series of Ecclesiastes, an honest look at life. Al Stewart is our speaker today, and his talk today is Eternity in Our Hearts. So if you want to go ahead and open up your outline at this time, I'm going to start at the sentence mark number one, and then we'll have Al come up. There's a time for everything. A season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, and a time for war and a time for peace. What does the worker gain from his toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in its time, and he has also set eternity in the hearts of men. Yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end.
Oh, good afternoon. I'll try it again. We've got a few visitors here today. We want a little enthusiasm. Good afternoon. Well done. Excellent. Okay. Well, we have a few. If you're visiting today, great to have you with us. We've got a few visitors upstairs. And to you young ones, I'd want to say, enjoy this time of your life, kids, because it's when you still have a few choices and it goes by so quickly. When you're a teenager, you think you can do anything and you do. Your 20s are a blur. In your 30s, you have a family, you make a little money and you think to yourself, where do my 20s go? In your 40s, where you get a little pot belly and you grow another chin and the music starts to get too loud and one of your friends from school becomes a grandmother. In your 50s, you'll have minor surgery. Now, you'll call it a procedure, but it's surgery. In your 60s, you'll have major surgery. The music will still be too loud, but it won't matter because you can't hear it anyway. In your 70s, you and your wife will retire. You and your husband or wife will retire to the Central Coast, and you'll start eating dinner about 2 in the afternoon and lunch about 10 in the morning and breakfast the night before. You'll spend all your time wandering around malls looking for the ultimate soft-serve yogurt and thinking, how come the kids don't call? How come the kids don't call? You'll get to 80 and you'll have a major stroke. And you'll end up babbling to some nurse who your wife can't stand but who you call Mama. Now, any questions? Does anyone recognise that little speech? I didn't write it. Does anyone recognise it? Well done. For Billy Crystal from the movie City Slickers, which came out a while ago. It's a funny movie. Billy Crystal turns 39 and has his midlife crisis. And that's the speech that he gives to his son's primary school Meet the Fathers Day. And the kind of the kids sit there thinking, and what's it all about? It's him saying, well, it feels like life is slipping through his fingers. And when you get a little bit older, you do feel that way. Why is it that as we get older, each decade seems to go by faster? Really, it does. The days get longer and the years get shorter. Why is that? Well, the obvious answer is technology, isn't it? If we just have better and faster technology, we'll have more time and life will be more relaxed. So here's a dozen or so dates for you. And Russ, we're on the ball already. I'm going to take you through some dates that have made us change the way that we feel about time. 1837, Samuel Morse invents the telegraph. 1876, Alexander Graham Bell invents the telephone. But the first telephone was totally useless until he invented The second telephone. Well done. That's right. So you have to have two for it to work. In 1930, the first analog computer was invented. 1942, the first electronic digital computer. 1947, mobile phones invented. They weren't commercially available until 1983. 1948, the telephone pager. 1956, the first computer hard disk used. 1958, the modem is invented. 1971, cellular phones invented. 1988, digital cellular phones invented. And the first commercial email is sent. And isn't that a wonderful day when we got email? And then 1990, the World Wide Web. And here's the thing, we can do things so much quicker than before. Bang, 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 you can just get it done. It's instant, it's immediate. And of course, because of that, we all have so much more time, don't we? And at work, we're all just so relaxed. And we don't have time pressure on us. And we've got all this leisure time. And why is it that it hasn't worked that way? Why is it that the faster we can do things, the more time poor we seem? Have you ever thought what a funny expression time poor is? You hear it often. How can you be time poor? Every one of us has 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You cannot have more time than that. How can you be time poor? So how do you make sense of time and the seasons of our life and so on? How do you try and understand what's going on? That's what we come to today in the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a little book in the middle of the Old Testament in the Bible, written through the eyes of King Solomon, the greatest and richest king in ancient Israel. He lived about 950 BC. Solomon, with all his wisdom and all his wealth and so on, and he looks at what gives life meaning and purpose. Let me show you how he begins. In chapter 1, verse 2, I haven't put this in your outline. We'll get to chapter 3 in a moment. Chapter 1, verse 2, he says, as he looks out at the world, "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher, "utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." If you've been coming along, let me get you up to speed if you haven't been here before. We're on week 4 out of 8 now. And that word meaningless is very important. Keeps coming up again and again in the book. What does he mean? By meaningless, that's the New International Version, the English translation, trying to get hold of the meaning of the Hebrew word hebel, which means a mist or a breath or a vapor, something that's there and then it's gone. You know, like when you breathe out on a cold morning, you breathe out, the mist is there and then it's gone. And he's saying all of life feels like that. Life is a vapor, it's a mist, it's transient, you can't hold on to it, it slips through our fingers. And he says it again and again. And what he's actually looking for is something that lasts, something that's permanent, something that has real value. The very next verse, he asks this question. What does man gain from all his labour at which he toils under the sun? So we work really hard, and we do, right? We work hard. What's the gain? And gain is a commercial term. It's what's the bottom line? What's the take-home value? What's the cash value, the dividend? What's left after we work really hard? And notice the little phrase, under the sun. What does he mean by that? He uses it, I think it's 27 times in the book. What's he mean? Well, if we just look out at the world on a nice sunny day like today, if we just look out under the sun and all we had was our mind and our ears and eyes open, what do we see? What do we see? Now, he's not an atheist, not at all, but he's saying, we kind of intuitively know God is there from what's been made, and that, you know, we know intuitively. But what if God hadn't spoken to us? What if all we had was what we see and hear and so on? How would we make sense of life? And what he's done is to set out and try and find something that lasts, something that's permanent, something that isn't hebel or isn't a mist, a vapor. And today we come to the idea of time or the seasons of life. Now, how do we make sense of that? If you've got your outline there, we've printed it out. And there's a very famous poem at the beginning of chapter 3. In fact, it was made famous in previous generations by the band called The Birds. And for you guys who are a bit young, have a go at that for haircuts, right? Now, that's some serious haircuts there. You can see in verses 1 to 8, the poem is there and how you can take it apart, and let's have a look at it. So verse 2 is about the biggest events in life. Time to be born and a time to die. Verse 3, about creative and destructive things. Time to plant and uproot, to kill and to heal, tear down and build. Verse 4, emotions, public and private, about joy and sorrow. Verses 5 and 6 are about building and possessions and things that we do with those. Verse 7, about speaking, when to speak up, when to be silent. And verse 8, about personal relations and national relations, so love and hate and war and peace. But that's not really kind of the way to understand a poem, is it? It's kind of, you know, dissecting it and whatever, and you know, a computer program would do that. No, no, you need to feel it. Now, Russ has already read it for us nicely, but let me have another go. And as I read it, you see, how does it feel? How does it feel as I read it? There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. You get the feeling? It's the feeling of the pendulum as it swings. Or perhaps even better, the metronome that keeps time backwards and forwards. Backwards and forwards. And what do we have? We have 14 pairs of events, from the biggest things in our lives, obviously our birth and our death, to smaller things like time to sow and mend and build, from the personal, love and hate, to the national, war and peace. And what I think he's telling us is this. These things in life are going to come and go, and you cannot stop them. It's like trying to stand there and stop the waves coming into the surf. You cannot stop them. But they will come. Things wash in, things wash out, you cannot stop it. And so wisdom lies not in any particular action, but in understanding the season. I'll give you an example. So the stock market. It's not hard to buy shares, it's not hard to sell shares. What's real wisdom is, when do you buy, and when do you sell, and when do you sit? If you understand that, you're going to make a lot of money. What's the season? Time to buy, time to sell, time to sit. Which is it? Is it in terms of, say, how we speak? It's very easy to speak up and say things, but is it the time to speak up or is it the time to shut up? And if you can get the timing right, not only is timing the secret of comedy, timing is the secret of having powerful things to say. There's a proverb in Proverbs chapter 15. It's another book of the Old Testament. In Proverbs chapter 15 says, a man finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word. If you can think what to say, bang, on the spot, it can be very powerful. As a mate of mine who's very good at doing that, he was working as a chaplain for one of the rugby league teams in Sydney, and he just kind of started as the chaplain, and one of the players walked in, actually a very famous player, I won't say his name, but you would have heard of this guy, so he's a big man at the club and so on, and my mate is a chaplain in the dressing room. So the player walks in and says, oh, so you're the new chaplain, are you? He says, yes, I am. Sir, what could you do for me as chaplain? My mate says, I do a good funeral. I wish I could think of things like that to say. I always kind of think 24 hours later, but it's not the same if you rang him up and said, oh, you know, you asked me yesterday. It's not the same. It's knowing when to speak, when to shut up, what to say, and so on. And so what's important in life is realising what season is it, what time is it. And if you get that right, it's like you can work, you know, with the grain in woodwork, or paddle with the current in the stream rather than against it. So is it time to work or is it time to rest? If you get those mixed up, you've got problems. What's the stage that you're at in family life? If you've got little kids, well, it's time to hold them close and control where they go and what they do. You've got to teach them, hold them close. But 20 years later, when they're growing, you've got to let them go. Now you get those two seasons mixed up and you've got problems. It's understanding the seasons. What's he saying? See, look at verse 11 on here. He, God, he's talking about God, he has made everything beautiful in its time. And so the right event, the right action at the right time is beautiful. Like, oh, that first cup of coffee in the morning. Right? I get up early. I'm just a little bit neurotic. I just love to get up early. And that first cup of coffee, and there's no one else awake, how good is it? And then the second and third are pretty good as well, actually. I wonder why I can't sleep. But that first coffee is just beautiful. Or that first smell of spring. You know, winter's been cold and it's pretty miserable, and then you just get that smell of spring and you know that it's coming. Or when you see someone you love at the airport for the first time in a long time and you get that hug and you know it's all right. Or last Saturday night, we managed to get Kathy and I got all four of our kids, who've all left home now, got all four of our kids around the same table with three of their sidekicks, as Kathy calls them, but they're all okay. And we had all the family together and Kathy's mum and dad, and then we celebrated Kathy's mum and dad's anniversary and a couple of our kids' birthdays and just ate this, like, outrageous Asian meal with the biggest lobster I've ever seen, and Kathy's mum and dad paid. It was just the right thing at the right time. It was beautiful, okay? And don't you get the feel of that? When the right thing happens at the right... That's what Solomon's saying. Wisdom is understanding the seasons and the times. Do you know what he's also saying is there's so much of our life that we don't control. Because these things are going to happen, whether you plan them or not. Now, we work hard at planning our lives, and sure, we should, and work hard at being organised. So we go to time management seminars, we buy big diaries, we read time management books. So I read Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And not only is he good looking, he's a good writer as well, okay? And I thought, oh, well, okay, that was useful. If I could ever do that, it would really work. And then thought, well, no, maybe I'll read the sequel. And so he wrote another book called First Things First. And I'd read a chapter and it was interesting. I was on an aeroplane. And then I managed to get up and put it in the front, in a seat in front of me, and then left it there and left the plane. And it cost a lot of money. So I've rung the lost and found at at Qantas. You know, any idea how embarrassing it is to ring Qantas and say, oh, look, this book I was reading about getting my life together and being organised, I've lost it and I haven't read it yet. And can you... They didn't ever find it. So we try hard to control our lives. And you can schedule the happy times. Do you know that? We schedule the 21st birthday parties or the weddings or the family get-togethers and the anniversaries, and we do, and that's fun. But we don't schedule funerals or heartaches or depression, and yet those things happen, don't they? And we don't control our lives. And another thing that may well grab you, and that is you think, how far does the metronome or the pendulum actually move? Because as you look at these events, they cancel each other out. A time to be born and a time to die, to weep and to laugh and to build and to tear down. And then in the end, it's as if nothing's happened. And what's life all about? And you see what he asks in verse 9? What does the worker gain from his toil? That word gain again. What have you got? What do you own? What do you have for all of our work? And Solomon looks out at the world and he sees four problems that he sees. In a world where the seasons come and go and we don't control our lives and we try and fit in, he sees four problems. Let me take you through them quickly. You see verse 10. He says, I have seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. What's the burden? I think he's saying we have eternity in our hearts, and yet we can't work it out. I'll show you a man who I think is very close to that. Paul Davies, very famous professor of physics, and has written a number of best-selling books and so on. He's an Aussie. I think he's working in an American university. Does anyone know Paul Davies now? Yeah, he's at an American university. I just can't remember. But in the end of his book, The Mind of God, and Professor Davies is certainly not a Christian, or certainly wasn't when he wrote this, let me read to you what he says at the end of talking about physics and what he's seen about the world. He says, I cannot believe that our existence in this universe is a mere quirk of fate, an accident of history, an incidental blip in the great cosmic drama. Our involvement is too intimate. The physical species Homo may count for nothing, but the existence of mind in some organism on some planet in the universe is surely a fact of fundamental significance. Through conscious beings, the universe has generated self-awareness. This can be no trivial detail, no minor byproduct of mindless, purposeless forces. We are truly meant to be here. You see what the great physicist says? We're not the product of mindless, purposeless forces, which is what we're being told by other, inverted commas, famous scientists. He can see, that's getting close to eternity in our hearts, isn't it? He can say, we're meant to be here, there's something else going on. And you know what? That's as far as he can get with his physics. He can't fathom it. See, verse 11, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to, we can't sort it out. Now, under the sun, he's saying, if all we have is what we see and so on, there's a kind of an answer in verse 12. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toil. This is a gift of God. He's saying, look, if you can enjoy life, enjoy it. Right? Enjoy it. But on your own, you won't be able to work it all out. Enjoy it, but on your own, you won't be able to work it all out. It comes to the second problem. I'm going to go through the second and third problems very quickly. We're just going to be a bit short of time. I want to get to number four. The second problem, what's he saying? It's like the same thing happens again and again. Verse 14, I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing take it from it. God does it so that men will revere him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. The idea of God calling the past to account, the scholars tell me you can translate that, or it could be translated as God makes the same things happen again and again. It's the idea that nothing ever changes. He talks about it a lot in chapter 1. If you were here, or you could read back chapter 1. I'm going to keep going. And he says there's a third problem, verse 16. It's a heartache problem, as he sees, and I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. Injustice and power abused and so on in our world, and those who suffer from it wonder why. What is this? Why is this happening? And he thinks intuitively, well, there'll be a judgment day, or every dog has his day, if you like. Verse 17, I thought in my heart, God will bring judgment both to the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity and a time for every deed. You know, if there's injustice, the pendulum will swing back to there being justice, and God will bring that. I think that's at an intuitive level. But it's the fourth problem that really gives it all teeth. See the fourth problem in verse 18? He said, I also thought, as for men and women, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. Remember meaningless? A breath, a vapor, it's fleeting. We don't last. We die like the animals. He keeps going. Verse 20. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward, and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth. And if all we have is what we see, who knows? Here's a photo. One more thing about my family. It's an old photo. It's about 7 years old. So since then, there's been a lot of growing happening. Kids growing bigger, me growing older. But I wanted to show you one of my best mates ever in this photo, and he's lying at the front. His name is Arnie, and we were good mates. He's a Rhodesian Ridgeback, about 45 kilos, just dynamite. We used to run together. We had lots of fun. But about 7 years ago, when he was 13, and his back legs started to go, and he'd hobble, and he couldn't walk properly, and he started to get, I don't know if dogs get dementia, but he kind of started to lose it a bit, and he was going a bit blind, and it probably let it drag on a little bit too long. And I said to the kids one day, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take Arnie to the vets. They said, Dad, it's the third time you've told us this week. I said, well, yeah, I'm trying to get you used to the idea. They said, no, you're trying to get yourself used to the idea. I said, well, yeah. So I took him down to the vet, And I don't know if you've ever had to do it, take someone you love to the vet, but they bring out a needle. It's like bright green, like full of green GI cordial. And kind of held Arnie's head and gave him a pat. And the way the vets usually inject it is up the side of their arm. It doesn't hurt them at all. They just give them a needle up the side of their front leg. Green GI cordial goes in, and about 5 seconds later, the lights go out. So I held his head, injection, lights go out, that's it. And the vet said to me, "Do you want to stay in here with him for a little while?" And I said, "No, I'm all right." So I made it outside into the dark before I had a big cry on the way home. I still miss him. I still miss the big bloke. But here's the point. What's the difference between him and me in that photo? Well, someone who loved him sat and held his head and he died, and I hope in a few years' time my kids might turn up and do the same for me. And then we'll be buried, me and Arnie, just the same, and what's the difference? Now, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to see what Solomon said and how perceptive it is. We live with eternity in our hearts. We know there's more than just this. We know there's something else. And yet we die like our pets. Do you see the point? We live with eternity in our hearts, and we die like dogs. And is it any wonder there's so much turmoil and angst and heartache that we live with under the sun? And is there an answer? Well, a kind of an answer in verse 22. He says, "So I saw that there is nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? If you can, enjoy your work. Make the most of it. But on your own, you're not going to work it out." And so we build and we demolish. We laugh and we weep. We're born and we die. And that's it. Now, let me close the book of Ecclesiastes just for a minute. And we step forward 1,000 years. Right? So from 1000 BC to about 50 AD. And there's another old man towards the end of his life who sits and writes a letter, and he writes to the people who've become Christians in the Greek town of Corinth. And as he writes to them, he's thinking similar things. He actually says to them, as he writes, this is in the New Testament, in the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 15. He writes and he says to them, "If this is all there is, if this is all we have, well, let's eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." That's what he says. But he says, no, we don't have to live like that. Why? Because there's an event that has happened. There is an event that's happened in history, and it's like a big peg that's just driven into history that you can see and hold on to. And what's the event that he's talking about? Well, he says it in verse 20. He says, "But Christ," right, talking about Jesus, "but Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep." Now, what's he mean? He's saying the resurrection of Jesus like punches a big hole in history. Why? Well, first of all, it happened. And the Christian faith is actually built. The teachings of Jesus are built on public events, things that happened. His birth, life, death, resurrection, it happened in history. And if you want to, you can actually look at the historical evidence about the resurrection of Jesus. It is very strong. Okay. So there's that. First of all, it really happened. But you see also what it says about the idea of Jesus has been raised. It not only does it show that he truly is the Son of God, as he said, that he conquered death, but you see the idea of the first fruits, and that is, it's the idea of him being the down payment. He conquered death, and those who trust him will also do that. He's the first one, the others, those of us who trust him will find that same promise of eternal life. And so, I mean, I've just touched on that to show you that, no, there is an event in history that changes everything. So as we come to the end, let me ask you, what season is it for you? Where are you up to in life? What are the decisions that maybe you need to realise actually the season has changed and you need to fit in with the season and work with the grain? What are the seasons of life? Where are you up to? And if I could suggest, if you haven't done it yet, maybe it's the season to actually investigate and take Jesus seriously. And I'll hand over to Russ. Ah, I see. He's about to tell us how you could actually read the words of Jesus for yourself.
At this time, if you would like, if you haven't already written down some questions, please do. I'm going to ask Jamie and Caro actually on this level to actually come down and pick up any questions that you may have. Jeffrey's coming up top in case there's some questions up there too. I'm writing down on the small slip of paper if you have a pen and paper with you, and I hand those into these folks walking around. We'll get them up to Al, and Al will answer those questions here in a moment. All right, I turn it back over to the more interesting one than myself, Al.
Okay, but I've got three questions. How much time we got? Russ, you'll stop me when you...
Yep.
Okay. Someone who's noticing carefully what's written, if, quote, under the sun is used 27 times in this book, why in verse 1 of chapter 3 does the writer use under heaven, and what does it mean? Yes, good question. I've been having a little running discussion with Peter Caldor, who comes here as well. Where's Pete? Is he here? No, he's not. There's one other place that he uses under heaven as well, and as far as we can work out, there isn't any difference. Under the sun just means under the sky and so on. Under heaven, the same thing as far as we can work out. Just twice he uses that. I can't tell you why. Why is having eternity in our hearts a burden? Great question, because I think I said a couple of sentences wrong. If you have a look at the text, if I said having eternity in our hearts is a burden, I didn't mean to. The idea of the burden there is this kind of weary busyness that God's put on us. What does the worker gain from all his toil? Verse 9, I've seen the burden God has laid on men. And that is, it's like we work and work and work, and it's almost that God's put that kind of busyness, that we're so busy and stressed and so on, that God's laid us on that, and it doesn't seem to deliver. I think that's what he means by the burden. And then he talks about, he's made everything beautiful in its time, and he set eternity in the hearts of men. He's almost saying, can you relax? Understand, just do things that are beautiful in their time, and God's put eternity in our hearts. It's a good thing, and yet we can't work it out. I think that leads to frustration. We have eternity in our hearts. We die like our pets. I think that explains a lot of the angst that we live with. Last question. The guy who wrote Ecclesiastes, is he in heaven? Read chapter 12 and see what you think. I think yes, but he's writing under the sun. The answer, the key that unlocks the book, is in chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. So, number one rule of being a preacher, never steal your own thunder. Good question. Good question. Chapter 12.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.